Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or just through restaurantguysradio.com.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right. Little tattered, I think, from our travail in the opening a new restaurant and doing this radio show and running an old restaurant, and
it's a lot going on.
Yeah.
It's a lot going on, but you know what? We need to take time to reflect.
Yes.
Did you know?
Okay, go ahead.
Did you know that Thomas Swanson died?
Thomas Swanson of the Swanson
Frozen
Dinner?
Did you know that Thomas Swanson was the inventor of the TV dinner?
I guess I did.
Yeah, did you know?
It wasn't Mr. Banquet?
He died at the age of 83. Which is amazing if he was eating those things, they lasted that long.
Consider the salt levels that he was eating. Let's not make fun of the dead. Come on.
Oh, you ready for this? The original TV dinner featured turkey, cornbread dressing, and gravy, buttered peas, and sweet potatoes, and was packaged in a three-compartment tray. The trademark TV dinner was dropped from Swanson's packaging in 1962, but then was brought back in 1999 as part of a promotion centering on the 45th anniversary of Swanson. An outgrowth of the innovation of the frozen entree options produced by the specialty food marketplace, yada, 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 yada. He used it as a way to use up extra turkeys after Thanksgiving one year.
Nice.
Smart guy.
Yeah, very smart guy. Sold millions and millions of frozen dinners.
Of terrible
the food
pieces
that
of food.
It's not just bad, it's bad for you.
Exactly. You know, it's funny. I remember when, I remember TV dinners.
Absolutely. And the little folding trays for which you use them in front of the TV.
And everything about that is horrible.
Yeah. They're big, though. I remember being 5, 6 years old, and that was like a big thing.
Oh, if your parents would let you have a TV dinner.
And you had to have a TV dinner in front of the TV.
Oh, yeah. That was the whole thing. You weren't modern if that didn't happen.
That's it. You were.
How horrible was that? My mother would cook good food, as good as she could. And I wanted a TV dinner.
Yeah.
I mean,
really,
and that
sad.
Was. But I have to say
but
that
it's marketing. It's commercials. And we talk about commercials to kids all the time. And that's what it is. We watched the commercial. And we wanted the Swanson frozen fried dinner or the banquet fried chicken
and
dinner.
And it didn't matter that it tasted terrible. And I remember being a kid and I was excited because, you know, it was different than what you normally got. And the television had convinced me that was a really great thing to have. And I remember my sister got married. My sister is, my oldest sister is 15 years older than I, and she had gotten married when I was only 6. And she would occasionally take me and watch me. And I thought it was so cool when I went to Pam's house because she would let me have TV dinners.
Right.
She and her husband would eat real food, but then they'd let me have a TV dinner. You know, to me, that's child abuse now. But this stuff is horrible. Everything about it is horrible. It's the idea that to eat dinner with a television on, I think, is horrible.
Well, it's also the idea of eating food that's 6 months old, a year old.
Well, and also food that's frozen together and then heated up together. So your peas always tasted a little bit like chicken, and your chicken always tasted a little bit like peas, and it all tasted like the chemicals and salt that it was.
Well, we've had huge revelations too in this marketplace. You know, now we have microwavable TV dinners. Oh yeah, it doesn't have to take 45 minutes to defrost your food anymore. We can do it in 8 minutes.
My that and the Salisbury steak was always a scary one. What was actually in that? But
Salisbury steak.
It's a triumph of marketing over matter. I mean, it's amazing when I think back to being a kid, and it speaks to what we talk about all the time about advertising to kids, because I know now that was garbage. I know that SpaghettiOs smell like dog food when you open that can, but the commercials, especially as a kid, convinced me otherwise. Now, I'm telling you, when you're home, open a can of SpaghettiOs and open a can of dog food. There are similarities in how they smell.
Francis, I watched a Quiznos commercial the other day where everybody's all excited to be eating their Quiznos sub, and if you look at the sub, there was another one with a cheeseburger from someplace. And if you look at the food that's in the commercial, It's disgusting gray matter.
Looking. It's disgusting it's looking on TV.
I mean, it looks really bad. Look at the food. Next time you see a commercial for Subway or one of these places, look closely at the food. Don't just look at the little...
Dancing miles yeah,
the
or
little,
whatever
the little
it is.
Flashing metal that distracts you.
But we are. We're like children who are distracted by a shiny object. It's amazing to me that people don't... And listen, those of you who listen to this show, those of you who cook, those of you who care about great wine and food, you are doing good. You're doing well for yourselves. But you're also... And it's not about snobbery. It's about when we demand good food... We are in more control of our own lives. We're like, you know what? You're not going to pull that over on me. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get me to eat this food that's really bad for you.
My kids are more excited about the little toy at McDonald's than they are the food. They don't care at all about the food.
But in a kid's mind, you don't separate that. Mm-hmm. The experience is going to McDonald's, and so you have brand loyalty to McDonald's, which is not, you know, that's what we talk all the time about advertising to children. It should be illegal. Advertising aimed directly at children who don't know the difference between news and advertising.
Clowns who sell you toys and food. Why do I need a clown to sell me food?
Yeah, exactly.
And who is this clown?
And you, well, and the thing is, you're not. You know, mom's not at home anymore for most people. Mm-hmm. It's not net 8 hours a day. The television spends more time with your kids than you do. And we need to have a certain level of standards, I think. Listen, I have more marketing news for you. The Potato Council of England. Feels very strongly about the image that they portray. British potato farmers and the British Potato Council are campaigning to remove the term couch potato from the Oxford English Dictionary because it believes it puts this versatile vegetable in a bad light.
Well, I think they ought to be outraged. Naturally.
You know, I think that the British should leave the whole potato subject alone for another 150 years. You know what I'm saying?
Come on. I just can't stand stuff like this. Get over yourself, potato industry. Okay, couch potatoes.
The campaigners want couch potato. The campaigners want couch potato replaced with couch slouch. Of course, the slouch lobby will be weighing in on that.
Next week, slouches around the nation rebelling.
And then, of course, the couch manufacturers will get in on the horn in on the whole thing. You know, people with scoliosis coming out against the couch slouch thing. We're outraged when we're going back with the potato people. Cut it out.
Okay. You got to stop. Oh, we just got to stop. We got to stop with all the ridiculousness.
Yeah, I'm
with
you.
Can we stop, too?
I'm with you.
Is that enough ridiculousness for tonight?
Yeah, there's more in the news, actually. There's more in the news. In France, it seems, there's such a glut of French wine, and that has to do with a weak American dollar as much as anything else. And also, they've had some very good years, and because there was such a boom for so long, you know, vineyards, one of the tragedies of being a farmer, especially a grape farmer, is you're about 6 years behind the curve. If you want to plant more grapes, you plan, and then 6 years later, you get grapes for wine, and you can make wine. But if things have turned around by then, then you've got too many vines in the ground, everybody's producing wine, and you have a
problem.
Which
is exactly what happened. We went through this great revolution about 10 years ago where people started drinking wine and buying wine. And
vines everywhere.
Lots of people in France started planting more vines.
Well, but the problem was a lot of people in Argentina started planting vines. A lot of people in Chile started planting vines. A lot of people in the Eastern Bloc have started planting vines. And there's a worldwide glut right now. And the French are feeling it the most strongly. And so the highest appellation of the highest designation of wines in France, the top 15% of wines in France, the ones that we know here, the Burgundy, the Bordeaux, the Rhone Valley wines, the Meursault, you know, these wines are called, they have a designation, the abbreviation is AOC. Of course, I'm looking at Mark like he doesn't know this, but he does. And they're Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée wines, these are the top wines, the Châteauneuf du Pape. And these wines have never been distilled into alcohol before or thrown away in any way, and some of these are being distilled into alcohol. And there's a great piece in a couple of articles about these French winemakers who are like, would you like a taste of what's going to fill up your gas tank?
Unbelievable, turning wine into ethanol.
Speaking of wine, we have a guest coming on for the rest of the show, a gentleman named Jean-Luc Ledoux, who is... opened his own wine shop called Ledoux Wines. He's one of the best sommeliers in America for a long time, and he's left being Restaurant Daniele's sommelier to open a retail shop. Mark and I had a retail wine shop once, and we ran like the wind.
And we left it to get back into the restaurant business.
We'll be talking to Jean-Luc Ledoux in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And today we have with us a very special guest, an old friend of ours, who was a sommelier in a restaurant, one of the best sommeliers in America, and has now gone over to the retail side, something Mark and I did many years ago and then ran right back to restaurants because we weren't loving it very much. Jean-Luc Ledoux came to the United States in 1985, pursuing a rock and roll career. He wound up working in the restaurant business, pursuing his own passion for wine. He was a captain at Boulay, and in February 1995, he joined Daniel Boulou as captain at Restaurant Daniel. He won the 1997 Sopexa Sommelier competition for the northeastern United States. He was promoted to sommelier, where he guided the restaurant to win a Wine Spectator Grand Award. He also has a James Beard Award. He's just left the restaurant business to go into retail, where he opened Ledoux Wines in the West Village of New York City. Welcome to the show, Jean-Luc.
Welcome to the show, Jean-Luc.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
So, Jean-Luc, you're a rock star now, but not quite the path that you anticipated taking, I think.
Oh.
You're a rock star of wine.
Neither of you both, but I'm passionate about wine, and it's something that I've been loving and enjoying for many, many years.
Are you still passionate about rock and roll?
Absolutely.
Jean-Luc, I just want to know where you got that cool French accent from.
So, you know what, we're going to talk about wine in just a minute, but tell us about rock and roll. What's your relationship?
Talk about wine. It's much more interesting.
Oh, come on, but you came here, is that true? I read that on the internet. I never knew that about you, but you came here pursuing a music career?
Yeah, well, you know, I like music, but, I think I was drawn, you know, real fast to wine because it was much more that I could. I know, it just seemed much more interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk first about you being a sommelier. You were a sommelier in New York at a very special time. I mean, 1985 to the present. I mean, that is like when it really came together in New York and became a world-class wine destination. What's your perspective on that?
Well, it's true that, first of all, I have to say something about New York. I think this is probably the most exciting market to buy, sell, drink, enjoy wine in the world.
Why is that?
Because I think we're it's kind of a crossroads in many ways, where like in Europe, like in France, they're mostly, it's changing now, but in France, for example, they're much more interested in French wine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Kind of a chauvinistic attitude about wine in general.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, you go to a restaurant in Burgundy, and you would only find wine from Burgundy.
Right.
Go to a restaurant in Paris, I mean, you know, Paris you'll find more rounded wine lists and more rounded wine programs in general.
Yeah.
But I think that's still to this day, I find the attitude to be a little chauvinistic.
Well, in New York City, you can find more Bordeaux than you can in Burgundy, and you can find more Burgundy than you can in Bordeaux.
Absolutely, and also you can find every great Italian wine, you can find every great Spanish wine, Argentinian wine, Australian wines, where London, I would say, is also a very interesting wine market, but it's nowhere near as broad as what you would find here.
You know, Jean-Luc, one of the things, Mark and I teach a lot of consumer wine classes. We also do consulting for the business, but we love to do consumer wine classes. And if you guys want to take one, you can go to our website at restaurantradio.com and check it out.
We might take you on your offer.
What have I got to teach you? I mean, you know, maybe you can come and lecture for a day. That I would appreciate that, my friend.
I know, there's always something to learn about wine.
Yeah.
I think one of the main interest point about it is like every day you learn something.
Absolutely.
Like you never know everything.
Well, one of the things that we talk about amongst each other, Francis and I, is that wine is a living, breathing thing. You can even have the same wine that you had yesterday, and it's different.
Absolutely.
It continues to evolve. It continues to grow.
But
and it's a different vintage every year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the vintage you had has evolved in the last year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that you really touched on that I want to drive home to everybody that, you know, people think, oh, well, French people or Italian people, they know all about wine. You know, they sort of, you know, live it and breathe it. And that's true. I think it's not just chauvinism. I mean, if you grow up in a wine region, you drink locally, like you eat locally. You know what's there. You're familiar with what's there. And like we were talking earlier, if you go into a wine shop in Burgundy, you will find mostly Burgundy and some champagne. Whereas you go walk into a wine shop in New York, it can be, while it's tremendously exciting, it can be very daunting because you have all these different wines from all these different traditions that play by all these different rules all over the world. So it can be very daunting, I think, to be a consumer in America.
Well, first of all, you know, it's interesting. Like a newspaper called me a few days ago, and they were writing an article about, which I thought first was kind of wrong, about how customers and like in restaurants in general, and I think they called me because I'd been a sommelier in four-star restaurants for the last 13, 14 years, were kind of snobbish, and most wine lovers had no clue about what they were talking about.
Right.
And actually, I beg to disagree in that article, because I've been, you know, I've had the privilege of, like, you know, going to restaurants all throughout, you know, Europe and America and so on, and I've never seen a clientele as interested, as passionate, as knowledgeable, you know, as the New York clientele that I've had in the last 20 years. Because, first of all, like you say, you know, in New York wine store, you can find offerings from all around the world.
Right.
And people just seem more interested, you know. Like you say, in France, it's true, people taste wines all the time, but they taste wine from their regions.
And then usually,
there's kind of an attitude sometimes, which, thanks God, has been changing the last maybe 4 or 5 years, where people are just really interested in the wines that are around, you know, where they are.
It's amazing to me, and to watch as America discovers and gets hot on a certain region of wine. Like, Austrian wines were nowhere 10 years ago, and now Austrian wines are everywhere. And maybe the craze has subsided a little bit, but now Austrian wines have a permanent place on American wine lists. Hey, we're talking with Jean-Luc Ledoux. He has his own wine shop called Jean-Luc in Manhattan. He was one of the best sommeliers in New York and in America for a long time, and he's gone over to the dark side of retail, and we're talking to him about the wine.
The bright side.
It's my show, Jean-Luc.
You have to come back on that because of the sommelier.
We will. We're talking with Jean-Luc Ledoux. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schotten. We're about to get into a brawl here with Jean-Luc Ledoux, one of the top sommeliers in the country, who is now selling wine on the retail side. And he's going to tell us what's so great about that.
Let's ready to brawl. No, but, you know, it's interesting what you're saying. And it's true at first. You know, at times I was like, maybe I'm crazy for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have discovered being in a wine store, as far as being a sommelier, there's nothing more interesting than doing what I'm doing now, as opposed to being in a restaurant.
Really?
Absolutely. First, I get a much more diversified clientele than I got at Danielle.
That's true.
That's the first thing. Also, as opposed to working with a wine list, where, you know, you're always looking for something. Do we have this? Do we have that? Everything is in front of our eyes.
Right.
You know, all the products are there. I feel like a kid in a candy store. Huh? You know, so
it's a whole different kind of candy, man.
It's a whole different, you know. But I think I couldn't have dreamed of a better change of pace for myself. And it's like you turn around wines much faster. I think you first of all, you can present them at a price, I think, that's much friendlier than when you're in a restaurant.
Sure,
because you don't have the same kind of markups.
Yep.
I think it's bringing wine to the masses. I love it.
I think it's also very interesting when you're in a shop and you occupy a unique position, and, you know, people go to Jean-Luc Wine Shop because you're sort of a trusted wine merchant. It's a very old world way of doing business that I think is probably easier to do in Manhattan than it is out here in the suburbs, where people tend to go to the discounter even for their wines. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, our aim and, like, the approach that we've taken, I think, is very different than most wine stores in the country. Whereas we propose, you know, maybe 700, 800 selections. I promised myself to keep it to 500, 600, and we're already over that number, so I'm already in trouble.
We can't help it. That's just the way we are.
Like, oh, yeah, we're going to have that, and we're going to have that.
Right, of course.
But the fact is like, first of all, we don't have to deal with mass-produced items.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing against wines like Yellowtail and that sort of things, but
it's not why
I've opened a wine store.
I have some stuff against those wines, so...
I have nothing to say. They're just not my thing. You know, I think it's wonderful. Whoever created that wine, you know, is a brilliant marketing idea.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in working with, small... producer.
Here's Jean-Luc speaking our language exactly. You hear us talk all the time about buying from small producers who practice sustainable agriculture, and where you find the best food that's best for the planet and the best wine that's best for the planet is where you find the best food and wine. We'll be talking more with Jean-Luc Ledoux of Ledoux Wines, former sommelier at Danielle and Boulay in Manhattan, in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Everybody. everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or just through restaurantguysradio.com.
You can also find our podcast online. We're at Yahoo's Podcasts, which are brand new, and we're well established in Podcast Alley and iTunes, where about 30,000 of you are listening to us. Thank you very much. We love to hear from you. Send us email. We love you. Today our guest is Jean-Luc Ledoux. Jean-Luc owns Ledoux Wines, which has just opened in Manhattan. And we're going to put up his website linked to our website and tell you how to find him. If you're going to be in Manhattan, he's a great place to visit, and his website will be up shortly, and you can go visit. He was one of the top sommeliers in the country. He was a captain at Boulay. He was at Restaurant Daniel, where he guided them to a grand award from the Wine Spectator magazine, which is the highest compliment that can be paid to an American wine list. And before the break, we were just talking about his switch over into working on the retail side of things, and our mutual commitment and love of what we call estate bottled wines, or wines from one particular farm or estate, from small producers. Now, Jean-Luc, why do you love them as we do?
Well, you know, first of all, I think one makes wine very, very interesting. There's two kinds of wines, basically. You have wine that reflects the place that we are made at, and there are wines that are the products of a winemaker.
You know,
I would say Yellowtail is more of that second category.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, which doesn't make it a bad wine. I think there's some wonderful wines that I made like that. I think Chris Frigland, for example, has something called the Red Pilar Box today. That's the wine that's made in a larger quantity, and I think it's a wonderful wine.
What I say about those wines is that I'm glad they're getting people to drink wine.
Absolutely, you introduce people to wine with this, and then, you know, if you have a conversation, you know, and you can introduce them to a smaller grower and something that's a little more reflective of the place where the wine was made.
Right. I'd rather you drink Yellowtail with dinner than Coca-Cola.
Absolutely.
You know.
But, you know, I think what's very interesting with small producers, they really make wines that are reflection of the place itself. And, you know, when you taste like a Pinot Noir that comes from the Sonoma Coast or that comes from the Central Coast of California or that comes from other places, they all have a different taste. Also, the way the vines are planted, their exposure on the vineyard, all those have a different effect on grapes. And, for example, I have a great, you know, there's one wine that we're all being very hot on at the store right now. You know, it's an $8.99 bottle of wine. It's a 100% Cunoise grape from Châteauneuf-du-Pape. It's, you know, it's a wine that has some earthiness.
Well, you have to tell us what the wine is.
It's a Cunoise. The name of the estate is, we're going to get you involved.
Oh, nailed you.
Now you caught me in,
nailed you.
And,
Well, I think that a lot of listeners think that because we work in nice restaurants with very expensive wine, they think that's all it's about, and it's not all about that. I get more excited about finding a $9 or $10 or $12 bottle of wine that I think is special than I do about finding than a first growth Bordeaux being special, because a first growth Bordeaux is supposed to be special.
Exactly. You know, I mean, if you buy a bottle of first growth Bordeaux and it's not special, you're angry, and you should be. You know, when you buy a bottle of, by the way, this wine is from Domaine Montpertuis.
Oh, yeah, great wine.
I'm sorry, the name escaped me for a second. It's 100% Cunoise from the 2003 vintage. And I think that's a beautiful bottle of wine. I mean, you get something like that. You do have a sense of where the wine was made. And on top of it, where else are you going to find a wine made from 100% Cunoise? You know?
Cunoise, which is a grape, everybody. And also, those of you who listen to our show with Neil Rosenthal when we were talking about the movie Mondovino, that's one of the wines that Neil Rosenthal brings into the country. So
absolutely,
even more reason to go and try it.
Oh, yeah, no, of course. No, I highly recommend a lot of the wines that Neil brings in the country.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jean-Luc, one of the things people sort of ask all the time who don't, you know, in the restaurant, we're again, like you said, it's a selective clientele. When people come into a fine dining restaurant, they sort of are expecting to ask you questions. They're looking for something even if they don't know what it is, and they're very open to things. Being on the radio show has really brought us in contact with a broad array of people who may not go to fine dining restaurants very often, and we have wonderful email exchanges, and we run into people on the street all the time, and it's sort of the same as being in the retail. People ask about this estate bottled wine, small producer things, and why we care so much, and I often put it like this, and I'm wondering if you agree. It's like, you know, when you have Wonder Bread, which is made for the most people to like it, which means it's lowest common denominator bread, you know, as opposed to the bread from a particular baker, that is made in a particular way. Mm-hmm. And you go to that baker if you like crusty, hard bread. And if you don't like that kind of bread, you're not going to go to that baker.
Right.
You're
going
to find
the guy
a different
next door
baker.
Who makes it a little softer.
And if all the winemakers are like different bakeries who break their bread differently, people need to go to somebody like you, Jean-Luc, or me in the restaurant, or Mark in the restaurant, to say, okay, which loaf of bread do I get? You know, does that make any sense?
I love the parallel. No, I think it makes total sense, huh? You know, it's not, you know, that's why you need, like, to have a broad selection of wine, either in your wine list or in a wine store, because you want to, you know, it's true that, like, you know, my Quinoise is not going to appeal to 100% of my customers.
Of course.
And I wouldn't expect that. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if your wine store takes the time to talk with their customers, to
mm-hmm.
find out what they like,
mm-hmm.
You know, to try to spend a few minutes to understand their taste.
And
find the right bottle for them. I think, you know, that made my day. You know, that makes me very happy. You know?
So is that kind of what you're doing with your shop? You're a sommelier in a wine shop, so you're kind of there helping people, guide people to their choices?
Absolutely. Huh? You know, we're four people full-time in the store all the time,
mm-hmm.
trying to help out people. And I've made it my mission when I hire those people to find people that have a passion for wine, that love what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I wanted was to become, you know, I didn't want to become one of those liquor stores sometimes, and you feel like you're almost bothering the salesperson.
Right.
Or something.
Well, just for all you people who are buying wine at Costco, and I'd rather have you buying wine at Costco than not buying wine at all. But for all you people who are buying wine at Costco, recognize that Costco's buying the wine that comes in on the best deal and comes in at the best price, and that's the most important thing to Costco, is to get you your wine at 12% over cost and to get it on the deep discount. And what people like Jean-Luc are doing are trying to find you the best wine. And not only are they trying to find you the best wine that you can buy for the money, they're trying to match you and your personal taste to the wine that you're buying. And that's a skill. That's an art. You can't do that in a warehouse.
Hey, Jean-Luc,
and I think also, you know, if you come to the store, I think we're very competitive in our pricing. So we're trying to have both, you know, I can't compete with Costco, but, you know, we try to have, you know, I think our pricing is actually very extremely fair.
You know, one of the things that we always train our people on the floor to ask is when someone asks for a bottle of wine, the first question should be, you know, though it's, your mother said never answer a question with a question, when someone asks, you know, what do you recommend this evening, you as on a restaurant floor need to ask, well, what do you like? What are you having for
mm-hmm.
dinner? What do you feel like tonight? What do you normally drink? Do you find it's the same thing on the floor of a wine shop?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do that often. You know, it's actually been funny. I don't know if... You know, maybe because people know me from the restaurant industry. So every day we have people coming, like, oh, we are eating this tonight, or we're having that, and
mm-hmm.
what should we drink with it, or we're having a celebration, or that sort of things, you know. And, you know, we're doing tastings in the stores, you know, we have quite a lot of space in the place to offer tastings and lectures and that sort of thing. So
you know,
try to keep it very informal. It's very important to us.
I find that the relationship, you know, that you mentioned before, is it's not a list, everything's in front of you, and it's, you know, there's actually a very subliminal way that you relate to your customers that's different when you're standing and someone's sitting, as opposed to when you're both standing. It actually, I find it... It makes it a different sort of relationship.
I think you're a freak, Francis.
I find it much friendlier. You know, I would say that I find it much friendlier.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't had that much fun selling wine in many years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had a great deal of fun selling wine in my store, but it was just a little daunting for me. Although the hours in retail are much better than
mm-hmm.
the hours in restaurant.
Well, you have to close at a certain time, and you get your life. Are you finding yourself going back out to restaurants again more frequently?
Well, you know, I do a lot of events, you know, and things like that. So I'm still, you know, like almost like a day or two a week, I'm like going to do sommelier for some, you know, event or charity or something
mm-hmm.
like that, you know, because I've kept a lot of very close ties with the restaurant industry, of course, you know.
Right. So
and,
you still have the crazy
so, I mean,
restaurant
I'm able
lifestyle?
To have like kind of both sides of the coin, you know, at this point. So, you know, it's, but I'll tell you, how, you're right, hour-wise, especially the quality time that I have, you know, makes that I have more time to go visit winemakers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have much more time, you know, if I need to plan a trip and I need to go visit vineyards in California or Italy or France, you know, which I try to do about three times a year, you
mm-hmm.
know, I can manage my time. And also, one thing that's very important to me, being somebody in a restaurant, you know, probably 50% of my time only was wine. 80 to 90% of my time is wine.
Well, that's really fabulous.
When we come back, I want to talk more about some of the trips and some of the places that you go to see wine.
Francis can tell you about some of them.
That's right, in Italy we've been to together.
Our guest is Jean-Luc Ledoux of Ledoux Wines, formerly a sommelier in Manhattan, now a wine retailer in Manhattan, and we're talking to him about this new stage of the journey of selling wine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Soon to be Catherine Lombardi in restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here talking with Jean-Luc Ledoux. Jean-Luc was the award-winning sommelier at Danielle Restaurant, and he now owns Ledoux Wines on Washington Street in Manhattan. Jean-Luc, we were talking before the break about traveling. Do you get to travel more in the retail side of things, or did you travel just as much when you were on the restaurant side of things?
I always made a point to travel and go visit vineyards because I think there is the only way you can really explain and talk about the wines that you sell or that you drink is by visiting the vineyards. And, you know, it's funny, when we started mentioning that a few minutes ago, you brought me to think about a trip that we did together to Verona for the Italy Wine Festival.
Yeah, that was a really great trip.
And that was a great trip. Mm-hmm. But being of a French background, you know, I was, of course, more interested with French wines, and I knew, you know, a great deal about American wines.
Mm-hmm.
But that trip in 2000 totally opened my eyes about Italian wines.
Yeah.
Right.
And really, you know, broadened, I think, my wine knowledge, broadened the wine list that I was doing in the past. And, I mean, today, if you come to the store, I mean, a good percentage of the wine store is dedicated to Italian wines.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as, like, you know, I've been to Spain, I've been to France many times, of course, California. And every one of those trips has brought back memories, has brought back great wines that I've tried, has brought back friendship with winemakers, which in return, you know, was sometimes when I have a special cuvée, you know, they're, of course, they'll call people that have taken the time to go and visit them.
Sure, you can do special things when you do that.
Yeah, we know we have coming up next month, we have a Chardonnay from Aubon Climat in California. I selected a barrel when I was there.
That's so much fun to do.
Oh.
So we have our own label coming up. We were planning on doing a Pinot Noir as well. We have trying to do a cuvée of champagne for early next year in France.
You know, I find that so interesting. I mean, Mark and I occasionally will work with a winemaker, like Paul Hobbs most recently. We've done a few times where the winemaker will, we have such a great relationship, and they let you select an individual barrel that will become your own cuvée. And I've seen that you did that at Danielle, and you're going to be doing it at Jean-Luc Wines. I think that is so fascinating and fabulous, and it's such a mark of respect for the winemaker to you to allow you to participate on that level of things.
Oh, no, well, I feel very privileged to have that kind of relationship with a lot of winemakers.
It's a lot of fun. One of the things that's really interesting to do, and if you ever get to our listeners, if you ever get to travel to any of the wine regions, one of the things that you really want to take some time and do is taste individual barrels of the same wine and taste different cuvées of the same wine. So go through and taste how different a 3-year-old oak barrel tastes from a 1-year-old oak barrel of exactly the same wine from the same place.
I want to come back to one thing. We've been talking about retail wine and selling wine, and Jean-Luc, we've been talking for almost an hour now, and none of us have mentioned scores.
Mm-hmm.
You have big shelf. We haven't mentioned scores, 100-point scores. Now you have big shelf talkers in front of all of your labels, right? With how many points they have?
No, absolutely not. Actually, one of the early jokes that we had at the store, we were going to do. Actually, I'm still thinking about doing it one time, but at some point, it's like I have a big sign on front of the on top of the front door and say everyone's rated 100 and above.
I wanted to. I had some friends. We were going to come up with our own scale. It was the 142-point scale. No one would be able to figure it out. You know, like their wine would be 124 points. The idea is, it's not a contest, everybody. We're not out there looking to find the best wine. We're looking to find a wine that jazzes us. When you go out to purchase art or to go to a museum, you don't say, "I want to look at the best painting." Where is the best painting in the museum? I want to look at all paintings rated 90 and above. It doesn't work like that. And when what Jean-Luc and Mark and I are trying to do out there is there's a whole world of wine out there. And to visit people like Jean-Luc, and you're going to go find out his store online, and when you're in Manhattan, you're going to stop by and visit him. That's exactly what we're talking about. Did I get that right, Jean-Luc?
Absolutely.
Super. You know, and the one other thing I want to say is in that trip, we did a lot of business during the day, and wine people do a lot of business during the day, and we spit all day long, and it would be it would really cost you in your career if you were ever seen drunk in the middle of the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
11 o'clock at night's a different story.
How about 3 o'clock in the morning? Yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, you got to work hard and party hard. Hey,
there's,
John.
There's a great place that we all hung out in called Bottega Divini.
Oh, yeah.
In Verona. That if you guys ever go to Verona.
Yeah, the New York version's not as good.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, but although I think the poor wineries there have suffered a lot from our passing by, so.
Yeah. Hey, Jean-Luc, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us.
Great.
Our pleasure, and you know, thank you very much.
You're welcome,
thank you.
And we'll come by and see you in Manhattan soon.
I would love it.
Take care. That was Jean-Luc Ledoux. Jean-Luc owns Ledoux Wines in Manhattan. He was an award-winning sommelier in Manhattan at Restaurant Daniel. Oh,
and
my.
Actually a really, really, really nice guy.
Yeah, can just party like a rock star, can he? I used to be able to party like that. I wonder if he still can. I can't anymore.
I don't know. It's the as every year passes, my ability to party like that goes down.
But, you know, remember that when we're talking about, you know, we go to these places to find these great wines, traveling is part of our business. And we've chosen this business because we like it. And, yes, we're looking to find the wines that are most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, it's not about the best one.
And one of the things Jean-Luc said while we were interviewing was that how important it is to get to know the winemaker and taste the wine in the appropriate setting. I think that makes a big difference. Learning about the wine, you get a frame of reference about that particular wine and it helps you to understand the wine a little better. But B, you also can see the whole picture better.
Mark was making the whole picture move with both of his hands and then hit the microphone.
I'm Italian. I talk with my hands. Take it easy.
So, but here's the idea. Listen, if you can't go to Italy, just go see Jean-Luc or come to us and we will recommend some great wines. And we don't recommend wines based on score because scores are if you have 12 wines lined up in a row and you put them all in competition and say, oh, this one's the best, that one's the best, let's have a vote. Who cares? When you go to Jean-Luc or you go to come to me and Mark or you talk to somebody who's passionate and cares about wine, it's because you want to buy a bottle of wine to drink with your dinner and enjoy it all the way through to the end. And that's about enjoying life and food and friends. And we'll be talking more about that in just a moment. Mark and I are going to go hug and have a glass of wine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. You're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Our guest today was Jean-Luc Ledoux. We had passed many an interesting night with Jean-Luc Ledoux.
Jean-Luc was sommelier at Daniel Restaurant for a very long time.
And Boulay before that.
And Boulay before that. I mean, this is a really, really important sommelier in Manhattan who's decided to get out of the restaurant business and do his own thing and run this restaurant shop.
I have a funny story from that. He mentioned a trip where, actually, I think it was the first time
That was the first time I ever met Jean-Luc.
Well, Jean-Luc and I had met in passing, but that was the first time that we ever hung out together. It was evidently his first time to go to VinItaly, which is a large wine conference in Verona that now a lot of people go to. But back then, there weren't a lot of Americans, I don't think, that went from around here.
Mm-hmm.
We kept running into each other in Verona, you know, not Verona, New Jersey, Verona in Italy.
Right, we were traveling in the same circles.
And we were going to a party one night, and I think he was on the bus.
Oh, yeah, he was.
And Mark and I met this charming man from this little place in Italy called Lesona, two little wine regions.
Brametera.
Two denominazioni or regions called Brametera and Lesona. And we liked the wines, and we were trying to find him an importer, and we were going on a bus with an importer, and Jean-Luc was on that bus as well to a party in a cellar in the evening. Remember I said we spit during the day, but we swallow at night?
Well, it was a delightful, delightful evening with lots of wine being poured
and
some really, really delicious food and maybe a little bit more wine being poured than should have been.
And I love grappa. And Mark hates grappa.
Me not so much with grappa. Grappa, for anybody who hasn't had grappa and engine fuel are very similar in their
it's
composition.
It's very strong. It's meant for after dinner, and it's a man's drink. I know I'm getting the hate mail from all the women listening. Anyway, so we the importer that we were with, who's also a friend of ours, says, oh, I hate grappa. Both of them tell me how much they hate grappa. And I bought these two bottles of grappa along for after dinner. And they're like, it's disgusting. We're not going to drink it. The bus, we took a little bus out of Verona.
Mm-hmm.
And thank heaven we weren't driving it. Somebody
out to the vineyard.
And so we have dinner in the cellar and we're driving back. And all I have to say is, Mr. I hate grappa. I was like, give me that grappa. What can we drink? And we drank it out of paper cups in a bus.
Brametera and Lesona. It was the best grappa I've ever had in my life.
Sadly,
Sadly,
we drank a little too much and lost the winemaker's name.
We never found it again. We never brought it into the country.
So,
I'm sorry, Mr. Winemaker from Italy. Don't know who you are. We lost your wine.
Left it on the bus.
Drank it.
That's just a horrible story.
On the bus on the way back to Verona.
Anyway, check our website. We'll tell you how to get in touch with Jean-Luc Ledoux. If you're in Manhattan, you should stop by and say hi. He's a nice guy, a very passionate wine fellow, and so are a lot of the people who work work for him. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Chadwick.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.